A Knife of Recovery featuring Chris Dreisbach. How does a town hall approach turn into filming A Knife of Recovery? Christopher Dreisbach wanted to find a way to share powerful stories to his communities. He believed that compassionate and genuine vulnerability is what can heal us and bring people together. In doing so, he created A Knife of Recovery, a documentary that features stories of wrestling stars. Since then, he has traveled across many places for a safe place for people to connect to one another through shared experiences. Chris joins this episode to talk about where this all started, the impact it has been having on communities, and his vision for what he wants to do and where he's willing to go. Christopher Dreisbach faced early struggles with addiction despite growing up in a supportive home with strong values. After numerous rehab attempts and legal issues, a compassionate judge directed him to a long-term treatment program in Pennsylvania, marking a turning point. In 2010, Chris identified a need for stable housing in the Lancaster recovery community and established a new Sober Living LLC. In 2016, Chris fulfilled his dream by founding Blueprints for Addiction Recovery Incorporated, a behavioral health treatment facility emphasizing evidence-based medicine and community recovery principles. Chris remains a thought leader, exploring new initiatives and partnerships throughout the county. He co-founded various enterprises, including a real estate investment company, a community art gallery, a wrestling academy, and a food service company aiming to create opportunities for others. Currently, Chris hosts A Knife of Recovery, a documentary featuring sobriety stories of wrestling stars. It is available on Prime Video, Apple TV+, and Google Play. He is also host of Repurposed. You can visit Chris's Linktree account to connect with him further in the podcast description.
This is Talking Addiction and Recovery, the podcast talking, you guessed it, all about addiction and recovery. Join your host, licensed professional counselor Andrew J. Schreier, as he and his guests break down recovery topics with raw honesty, delving into niche conversations around the topics of substance abuse, mental health, and gambling. We intend to meet individuals where they are on their own personal journey of recovery with dignity, respect, and compassion. We'll do more than talk addiction and recovery. We'll explore it. We're glad you've joined us. Here with today's episode, your host, Andrew Schreier.
Welcome to the show, Chris Dreisbach. It's amazing to have you on here. I can't wait to talk to you.
Did you just butcher my last name?
I know. I was like thinking I shouldn't do that, and then we talked about that.
It's all right. It's like par for the course, man. You gotta butcher the name.
Yeah. So how do you say your name? Let the audience know.
Dreisbach. Chris.
There we go.
Dreisbach. Legit. Facebook, like 2 days ago, I put a post up about how my name is misspelled all the time on the news, on just wherever we go. And I was telling the story about how at my wedding in 2012, they put my name as Dr. Eisbach, which was hilarious because I'm not a doctor. But
that's awesome. I will say you are like a first of its kind on the podcast because I get, you know, a lot of authors, people write books and they want to talk about it, or people who've been in the field before and are sharing like some of their work or someone sharing their story. But I mean, you're here and part of it is we're going to talk about, you know, the movie or film you made, you know, about A Knife of Recovery. And haven't had someone on the show who's done like a film or a documentary, so to speak. And it's really interesting to talk about that because I've never really done that.
Well, that's awesome. I'm happy to be the first, you know, documentarian, I guess you would say, on your podcast. And I'm thrilled to talk about Knife of Recovery with you and everybody else.
Yeah. So where did that whole thing start? I mean, I was so amazed when I got the invite to watch it. And my expectations were really, I don't know what to expect because I've never really seen it or watched anything like this. So where did this all come from?
Man, that's a long, long story. But in 2018, we did this crazy town hall tour across Pennsylvania. And 2018 was like the height of the opioid epidemic here in Pennsylvania. And we had just opened Blueprints for Addiction Recovery about 2 years prior. And you know, town halls were starting to become rather popular. You know, they'd grab up two, three, the most boring speakers you could possibly find, and then like trot them up in front of a big room of people where you're all like trying to stay awake and like, it's terrible, you know? And after a while I was like, you know what? Like this ain't working. I'm not a fan. I don't love sitting at all of these things that I have to sit at all the time. What if we did this in 18 cities across Pennsylvania with interesting speakers, people with powerful stories, people with inspiration, people with passion, you know? And like, I had this crazy idea, and we set up 18 of these events, and we had tremendous speakers, tremendous community turnout. And then I didn't do anything like that for quite some time. And gosh, what happened here? We started Three Legacies Wrestling, which is an awesome professional wrestling group here with my friend Jesus Rodriguez, who's also in recovery. And you saw him on the Night of Recovery.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had this big wrestling event at the local stadium here. That wasn't the first one. I lied to you. We had a normal wrestling event that we used to host at a little gym. And we brought out Sean Waltman, who joined me for a bunch of the town hall, you know, speaking engagements. He flew all the way in from Los Angeles, took his time to come out and talk to people in Erie, Pennsylvania, and Johnstown, Pennsylvania, and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And, you know, we just stayed close friends ever since. You know, he's just a great brother in recovery, person, you know, deep, deep heart for other people. And, you know, we got to talking, like, let's do another talk, but let's go a little bit crazier, you know, since Jesus is here. You know, he was in the WWE for a good period of time. Sean was in, you know, WWE and WCW and all the other, you know, wrestling companies for 40 years. You know, I was watching him when I was a kid. And we brought out Kurt Hussey, his guy who wrestled as Fandango, just another great brother in recovery. And discovered before that he was really inspired by the videos of Brandon Novak, who also just kind of happens to be a friend, and he's not very far away. So I thought, why not invite Brandon up to surprise Kurt on stage? And man, it was just one of the coolest moments ever for him to be surprised by the guy who inspired him to get into recovery. And we caught that all on film. It was amazing. And, you know, I don't know which one you watched, but there are a couple available on Prime Video already. And I think that original one should be out on Prime Video here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it was. And when you start talking about like the town halls, like I've been to some town halls, and people think like numbers and stats is what's going to like drive these conversations, and it never works. Yeah. Like you can give all the numbers or the statistics, but, you know, they're usually dry, or then they become emotionally charged. It's a lot of emotion that comes in it. And I think when I watched the video, when everyone came out and told their story and you asked questions, it felt so genuine, you know. So, you know, I've seen a lot of presenters, I've seen a lot of speakers, I've watched TED Talks, I go to conferences myself, and, you know, there's a lot of presenters that they come on and part of it's how they do their thing. But, you know, some of the speakers were sort of like, I'm a little nervous, or I don't like it. It just felt so authentic, where I think audiences connected with this. They're very relatable.
That's what we've been hearing too. I mean, you know, these guys specifically have all performed in front of 40, 50, 60, 70,000 people, oftentimes in their underpants. And they come out and are talking to, you know, 100 people in a room at the Moravian Center, or, you know, 200 people at the Ware Center, or wherever, you know, we've been. We did one in Philadelphia, and we did one in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania, at a really cool old theater, which used to be the largest stage on the east side of the Mississippi. Really cool venue. And man, these guys are like nervous. They're scared because you're not performing. You're not acting. Like, you're talking about your life. You're getting gritty, you're getting raw, you're getting real. And there's something really, really different about that. And there's something so connectable and so powerful when you hear somebody who has achieved those heights talk about being depressed,
talking about being hopeless, talking about all those things that we can relate to so easily. And even if you're not in recovery, every single person has experienced loneliness. Every single person can relate to sadness. Every single person can relate to loss, can relate to so many different things. And we as humans share those emotions. And when we share them with each other, we connect. And when we connect, we recover. And that is why Night of Recovery is where it's at.
It's an amazing level of vulnerability, because you mentioned they're performing in thousands of fans in their underwear. It's like to a lot of people that'd be scary, because like, who wants to be physically on display like that? But then when we switch it and they come speaking to 100 people, but they're being emotionally vulnerable, like that is just a whole nother stage to be on, or a whole nother presence. And that's, for a lot of people, that emotional vulnerability is very scary.
And still to this day, at, you know, near 17 years sober, 17 years in recovery, you know, I'm on a therapy journey myself right now, and I'm learning more about myself and more about my emotions and a lot of the things that, like, you know, I didn't take care of 17 years ago. And a lot of the things that, you know, had I understood and known 17 years ago, God knows where I'd be. But like, constant growth, constant learning, constant experience, that just makes you a better person, man. And, you know, it is very difficult to be emotionally vulnerable no matter what. I think everybody on earth can experience that and can relate to being uncomfortable sharing their inner soul, their inner thoughts. And I got to tell you, like, I've been good friends with all the guys that have been on all those stages for a long time, and there is no act. I mean, it is real down to the core.
Yeah, it felt raw. You know, it felt really any defenses or, you know, protection that like the self, the idea of, you know, I talk a lot about, like, a lot of what we do is self-preservation to just kind of like protect us, or what we think is like keeping us safe. And a lot of that just seemed like stripped away. And it was almost, you know, I know it calling it like group therapy, but it just seemed almost like a window into like what a group therapy would look like, when you have a bunch of, not a bunch, but a few people in a group together having those talks and sharing those things. It was sort of a glimpse into what the audience saw on those stages.
And I, like, the hope is that we can do so many more of these across communities, across the country, really. Wisconsin too, you know, like, everybody in Wisconsin needs a little bit of Night of Recovery as well.
Yeah.
Maybe Green. I don't know if I know too many other cities in Wisconsin.
Milwaukee would be good. Madison.
Oh, Milwaukee's in Wisconsin. What am I doing?
Yeah. Yeah. There's plenty of places that would work. I do want
to. I'm too, and I'm embarrassed right now. I'm ashamed that I didn't know.
the vulnerability too. One thing that stood out from what you shared, because you were part of this too. Like, let's not, what they did was amazing too, but, you know, you interviewed everyone, you had people on, you know, you asked some really great questions. As someone here asking you questions, I was very impressed at, you know, how you managed all that. And you gave flowers and credit to like all the guys in their work. There was a moment that I want to touch on where you brought up you know, Suboxone and methadone as treatment. And for the last 6 years, I've been working in settings that prescribe medication stroke or use disorder. And I've been in counseling for 19 years now. Didn't really know anything about that prior to, and you kind of went out of your way to mention that about people's recovery. And you even acknowledged like what you thought before and what you think now. And when I watched it, I was like, you know, he didn't have to say all this. Like, that was not something that I guess was needed to be a part of it, but you decided to speak on that. And I really wanted to ask you like where that came from, because that's not everyone will be willing to say that.
I get it. And it's hard to admit when you're wrong, you know, especially for a guy like me. You know, I love to be right, and that's just how I am. But you know, Sean used Suboxone to get sober, and I'll tell you, like, he would be dead without it. I watched my best friend Jake die of an overdose, and you know, would Suboxone or methadone or something have given him a chance to live? Possibly. And for the longest time, I ran around saying, like, oh, this is the only way to get sober. You know, AA, 12 steps, this, because that's how I got sober. And like, how arrogant of me to think that I have the answer and to think that I have the only answer. And after a while, I had some really great, you know, the first speaker I ever heard, actually, Dave Malloy, who's still a dear friend of mine to this day. You know, he was of the ilk that I was too. You know, we came up in AA and we believe that, you know, sobriety, abstinence, it's the only thing. It's the only way to do it. And after a while, man, we watched our entire generation get decimated, crushed by this opioid epidemic, by the addiction crisis, really. And after a while, it's just like, why am I watching my friends die? Why am I watching all these people die? Why am I being closed-minded and arrogant about this medication? Like, who's to say? I took Suboxone in 2004 or 2005, whenever it, you know, was pretty fresh to market. And it didn't really help me a whole lot, but I certainly wasn't ready for help either. And I think I allowed that implicit bias to kind of guide me for a long time. And thankfully, with the guidance of Dave and other people to kind of open my eyes, because I usually don't open my own eyes. Other people have to open mine for me. I just realized, like, I had to stop being judgmental and I had to stop thinking I knew everything and really, really, really just move into a place of support for you, for the people that I care about, the people that I love, the people that I'm honored to serve. I have to be supportive of you, no matter what that is. If it's Dharma Recovery or Smart Recovery, or God, there's so many of them now, Celebrate Recovery, NA, GA, CA, DAA, BA, whatever A you want. Like, literally, I do not care anymore. I just want you to be happy. I want you to find peace, and I want you to live the life that I've been able to live, which is so beautiful. That just, how arrogant of me. That's where that came from. And I have to openly say that every single time I can, because, you know, there are folks who are 15, 20, 30, maybe 40 years in recovery that are closed-minded to other options and other avenues. And maybe by hearing me say that I'm an arrogant idiot who could not open my eyes and support the people I love, maybe that changes something for them. And, you know, I'll openly admit my mistakes over and over and over and over again in the hopes that somebody else might open up a little bit and maybe by proxy save a life.
Yeah. And I also think you just show that, you know, it's okay to, you know, this is what I thought or believed in, but there was a change. Like, it's okay to, you know, we always talk about, like, you got to think different, you know, you have to change things up. And part of that is, you know, for a while, I thought a lot of similar things because that's all I knew. You know, like when I went to treatment programs and when I worked in them and when I went to schooling, when I got supervision, like that's what was taught to me. And I didn't know any better until I changed it up and worked somewhere and was around other people. And I still think, you know, I come from, I don't have lived experience. So I kind of tell people I never had a prescribed way of doing it. I never said this is how you do it because I did it. And I've always felt that there's everything doesn't work for everyone, but there's something that will work for someone. And I think I'm hearing a lot more of there's many paths in recovery. I don't know if you've hearing that a lot more than where we were a few years ago. And I still think I'm curious to know where you are with this. I'm still a little bit of, I think there's millions of paths of recovery because it's millions of people's lives and everyone's path isn't the same. Even if you go to the same meeting or you take a similar medication, it doesn't mean that is your path. Your life is your path. Our goal is to meet people on their path and give them tools, give them resources, people fall in the gaps when we silo that, when we say like, well, no, you can't do, or it's this, or it's that. Like when people venture through that, it's where they fall. But if we learn to meet people better where they're at in their own journey, I think they got a better chance.
Yeah. And then in the last few years, you know, since I've had that little bit of awakening, you know, really, truly individualized care is the only answer here. Because, like, you watch, you know, from the 60s on, when we started the whole 28-day model, you know, just you watch the abysmal 3%, 1%, 2% success rate. I can't even tell you how many times I was personally in a treatment center and I heard a lecture where they said, look to the left and look to the right. Both of those people are going to be dead. And I'm just like, oh, that's not good. You know?
Yeah, like, that doesn't bring us together.
How does that instill hope in me? You know, I'm over here like fighting for my life. I'm not even sure what I'm fighting against. And they're just like, oh, this isn't going to work. You know, so like, yeah, I'm here. And, you know, the judge made me be here, but it's not going to work. And coincidentally, the last time I heard that one as a patient was the last treatment center I was in 2007. So, and I think sadly, both of the people next to me probably are dead. So yeah. There is truth. There's truth to it. But, you know, I don't think that's the lead in. I don't think that's the approach. I think the lead in and the approach is if you're struggling, there's hope.
Yeah. And I think when we, the idea of meeting people where they're at and not abandoning them, I just, as I've done this more and more, I learn that everyone that I meet in their journey isn't in the same spot, but we used to like kind of treat it like when they come into treatment or they walk into the same place, like now they get kind of put on this conveyor belt where they progress the same, they go through the same. But, you know, I was thinking like I worked with a, you know, a young, you know, I say young kid, he was like in his 20s, early 20s, but he had more overdoses than his, how old he was. He had like 23, 24 overdoses. He was like 20 years old. And I remember, you know, when I was working with him, I feel like he said what he said because he felt like he had to. Well, I want to stop using entirely. And I think he said that because if he didn't, he would get kicked out of treatment or he's not ready. I always wonder if a part of him would ever feel safe to say, I just don't want to overdose. Like what can we do to help that? And that's like the individualized part of it is if that's what he wanted to try to work towards, how can we do that as best we can versus the idea of, well, I want to stop using entirely and never use again. I don't know if he was really there. I mean, yeah. He wasn't, but I think he felt like he had to say that.
And that comes from kind of societal conditioning, and not even just societal conditioning, like society within recovery. Because when I got sober, when I joined recovery, if you will, in 2007, like I was introduced to one path. That was it. That one path was all I knew. And until somebody opened my eyes and showed me other paths, like I didn't even know. I went through treatment four times. And all four times, I had no clue what I was up against. I knew the basics of what they were telling me, that I had a disease, that the only way to fix that disease was to take the 12 steps. And like, I did it, you know, mostly because I didn't want to continue going to jail. I didn't want to continue being hopeless. I didn't want to continue disappointing my family and making my mom and dad go to work depressed and sad or worried that their firstborn is going to die. I didn't want my little brothers to have to keep going to school, afraid, you know, ashamed that I was in the paper, that I was in jail, that I was whatever, that I was stealing their change jar, that I was all those things. And like, those were the things I wanted to stop. And at the time, you know, of 05, 06, 07, science hadn't even really fully evolved. We hadn't fully accepted neural pathways. We hadn't accepted the limbic system. We hadn't accepted all the things that we now understand in 2024. And man, I'm just so blessed to be able to be on this side helping people who are there right now. Even though there wasn't really too many people to help me in 05, 06, 07, I just landed in the right place at the right time, most providentially. And yeah.
Yeah. And when we watch the Night of Recovery, you know, you hear some similarities of what helps people and what they do, but you do get their unique individual story and realizing that once again, they're not, it didn't all work out the same way for everyone with how they got there. You know, there's just different paths and different timing. And, you know, for someone, it may have taken the second time, for someone, it may have taken the 10th time. You know, but those are all, you know, I've never really, as much as like that expectation is sometimes like, and like how you put it, society and recovery, where, you know, you go this treatment place, or you go to the, and then all of a sudden it stops. And like, I've never really heard someone say that that's how it was. Like, it takes several times. It takes learning to figure out what didn't work, to figure out what works, you know. But sometimes with substance use, there's this idea that it's got to, all of a sudden, a switch needs to change where it's just all entirely different. But in all the years of doing counseling and being in treatment with people, I've never seen that actually play out that way. But we still sometimes hold on to that.
Well, I think that's what, like, everybody wants is that white light experience where it's just a, like, whoa, I'm sober, I'm happy, you know. And I don't think that's real life. I don't think that's real life in anything, you know. Starting businesses, you don't just start a business and get rich. You start a business and you scrape and you claw and you fight and you work. And just like business, recovery is the same. Like, when you start, you might be getting better. It might feel a little bit better, but there's a lot of work. No matter what path you're on, there's a ton of work that has to go into evolving. There's a ton of work that has to go into learning. It has to go into, and that's really indicative of every area of life. Because even at, you know, 17 years in recovery, I still have to work on my emotional body. I still have to work on, you know, all the different things that keep me okay, so that I can step out on a ledge constantly and help other people feel okay. And you know, that's one of the things I don't think a lot of people like to talk about a lot. They think once you're sober, everything's all right, you know, the world is wonderful, there's rainbows and kitties and unicorns and whatnot. But I have to say, I've yet to see a unicorn in recovery.
Yeah, and that's another thing where when they were all telling their stories, it wasn't like life is all grand now and everything is great. Like, you could still tell, like, there's still things you're dealing with. There's still things you're learning. You know, part of me likes the saying, you don't know until you know. And there are times where you're learning about things that just come up or happen, and you're like, oh, I didn't even think about that. But now I'm hit with this emotion or this experience. And, you know, no one that shared their story seem to just have this, like, yeah, life is perfect and it's all great now. Like, you can still sense the struggle, but the struggle wasn't without hope, or wasn't without possibilities, or wasn't without belief that, you know, before I didn't believe I could overcome this, or I didn't believe I could manage it. But now there's, yes, I can struggle, but I have hope. I can struggle, but I have belief. I struggle, but I have others, and I'm not alone. I think that's sometimes the bigger message than just, well, the struggle's over.
Yeah. And once the struggle's over, I think that's when the real struggle starts, you know, because you have to navigate life clear headed. You have to navigate life without something deadening what's going on. And once you face life and recognize that you can face it successfully, it makes it a little bit easier the next time, and a little bit easier the next time, and a little bit easier the next time. And if you're starting to build a group of folks around you who love you, who genuinely want your success and want you to be better and be okay, that's when the magic really starts to happen. When a community builds around you, when you have a little village of folks just running around helping people with you, or you know, whatever it might be, just somebody to check in. You know, I had a pretty rough breakup not long ago. And, you know, the number of people who reached out to me to check in and just make sure I was okay was unbelievable. And I got to tell you, like, there is not much more on earth that's humbling than that. You know, just always being the helper and just shifting into a spot where you need help again. Wow. Like, life is just such a beautiful journey. And even through all that pain and all that ugliness and that suffering and that misery, like, there's beauty in it. There's always beauty in that pain. And being able to be aware enough to keep your eye on the fact that there is beauty while suffering, you know, that's a gift of recovery, because that's something I could not have done 18 years ago. Not at all.
Yeah, very well put. Yeah, I like that. I want to, it's going to seem like a curveball, but it's related to the show and the the documentary, but they do speak on the a little bit of the organizational side got put on it because they were in like somewhere in WWE and they were in other wrestling organizations. And I wanted to touch on that because there was one part where I forgot which speaker it was, but they talked about they reached out and they did get a help from one of the wrestling organizations they were working with. And it reminded me of this story, and I want to share this with you, where I was working with a guy who was working at a local shopping area, and it was like a 24-hour place, and he worked third shift. And it's kind of common, you know, that he was saying where third shift workers would get done with work and they would go to a bar and get breakfast and like drink like that early. And that was common. And he said, at first he was like lying to his colleagues because they would ask him and he would make up excuses to why he couldn't go. And he was in a treatment program, a halfway house at the time where I was doing counseling with him. And he was saying every time he kept making up lies, and he was talking to me about, I think I'm running out of lies. I don't know what to say anymore because I can't, like, how many appointments do I have, or how many, like, he was just worried that he was running out of lies. And we were talking about like, what would it mean to just be honest about it? Or what is it to just say you don't want to go and you don't have to explain yourself? And I was processing this with him for a couple sessions, and we had a counseling session a little bit afterwards. And I was like, you know, how's work going and that whole thing that you're dealing with? And he tells me that he lied to his colleagues again, but then he was walking to his car and his boss was walking nearby, and his boss asked him like, hey, why don't you go with the guys, you know, to get, you know, drinks and get breakfast. And he decided at that moment to take a chance. And he was told his boss, like, I'm actually in recovery. I don't drink and I don't want to go there. And, you know, movie moment here, the boss was, so am I. Do you want to go get breakfast somewhere else? And they started this tradition of getting breakfast somewhere. And I'm connecting this to what was talked about in the show, because I think there's a lot of idea that, like, I can't ask for that kind of help, or I can't acknowledge that I'm struggling to someone like a boss or an employer, because there's a fear of what's going to happen. And I deal with this a lot with like first responders. You know, I was talking about military, and there's a lot of people who fear that. And I really liked hearing about that. One of them went and acknowledged it, and they got help. They got support. Like, that is a real thing, but we barely hear those stories.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong about that. And the WWE is particularly unique, as they have a wellness program, which is actually probably the coolest thing on planet Earth, where if you've worked for them for one day, they'll pay for your treatment for the rest of your life.
That is, I don't think I've ever heard that.
Nobody,
who knows that?
Where else on Earth have I ever seen something that deep and that just open-ended? And every single one of them ended up reaching out and receiving help from the WWE. And, you know, they've been in the news a whole lot lately for really negative stuff, but that's something that I will never, ever stop talking about, because even if those guys run into trouble, they can reach out to the guy who runs the, you know, drug and alcohol part of the wellness program, Bob Gillar, who's just a gem of a human being. I mean, he stays up with them weekly. I mean, really, like, truly, it is the best possible program ever. And really, everybody has to reach out for help at some point or another. In my opinion, there's no such thing as a self-made person. I've been called that before because I used to eat out of dumpsters, and now I have a bunch of businesses and I do well. But I am by far not self-made. I was made by the hundreds of people around me. I was made by the community. I was made by being aware of my surroundings and being willing to step out and do things. And truly, it's really not much deeper or more complicated than that. So, like, learning to reach out for help, not just in recovery, not just when we're struggling, but in all areas of life, can take you to levels you never dreamed of.
And we talked too about one of the colleague of mine has often talked about like the thresholds for getting help and seeking support that, you know, sometimes the systems have been set up and how some people are with it. Like we make it more difficult to do it, you know, and it always comes up in substance use where it's like, if you send a person, the same person, you know, can they go get help easier and get access to it? Or can they go get their substance? Like it's easier sometimes to, we make it more challenging or more difficult. And when we talked about this, as you say that right now, it's, you know, where are the areas that someone, if they could say, I need help, where are those closest? And a workplace is going to be one of those, because that's where people are. I mean, if we look at like proximity of where someone is and what someone does, like how can we make those spaces where people can acknowledge that and get help and not be afraid of it? And hearing you even share that is incredible, because I don't know any other program that does that. Two, I don't know how many people are even aware that the WWE does that. It doesn't get enough attention that it probably should, but that's incredible.
I agree, man. And I think really like the shame and the stigma surrounding substance use has gotten so much better in the last even just 5 years, but truly over the last 20 years, it has gotten so, so, so much better to the point where like we can have these conversations on podcasts. I can go on the news and we can talk about what it's like to recover, and we can talk about where you go if you need help. And I mean, this is local news. It's not going to help some people, you know, across the country, but I can't tell you how many times I've done a podcast with somebody in, you know, Minneapolis, and I get 5 or 6 Facebook messages from, you know, moms in different states, you know, Mississippi or, you know, Oklahoma or wherever it might be. And they're just like, wow, you know, like my son, he's not a criminal either. He just needs help. You know, you're not a criminal. You just needed help. And look what could happen. I mean, just thinking about those messages alone gives me goosebumps. And just thinking about how sharing our story can benefit so many people on so many different levels. And, you know, my friend Shannon Moore, who's also in a lot of the Night of Recoveries, he always says our story is our greatest asset. And I believe nothing more on earth than that, because our stories are our greatest assets, even for folks who aren't in recovery, you know, like you. Your story is still your greatest asset. Your experience helping people along this path, massively helpful. The fact that you're doing a podcast about addiction and recovery, amazing. You know, like you don't have to be in recovery to be in recovery.
Yeah, that's where I've been thinking about that, like when we say lived experience, because like everyone's got lived experience. Everyone comes with their life, and this is who you are. What I like about the Night of Recovery too is that it really gave, and I'm really cautious about this because of it gave the speakers their ability to tell their story on their terms, because there are times where people's stories are used against them, they're displayed inappropriately, someone's got a soundbite or a hidden agenda. Like you also created a platform for people to tell their story in the way that was theirs, and they were able to share it in the way that they wanted to. And you asked questions that were hard or uncomfortable, but it was an atmosphere where they could respond, and it was very open and genuine. I think that's really, we talk about reducing some of the harm that's done to people, the misuse of their stories or using it for someone else's agenda or point. Like I do see that happen. And I try to be really cautious that when someone does share like you are in the way you did, it really does capture empowering someone to share their story in a way that is best for them and their journey, and not putting it where that is at risk for someone to do that, because that's not okay to do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, anybody could take, I mean, the Night of Recoveries are what, probably 6 to 8 hours total of content on Amazon, you know, and realistically, you could cut clips out of that and make me look like a complete idiot, I'm sure, you know,
realistically, you can cut clips out of anything I've ever done and make me look stupid. But thankfully, for the most part, I think people have good hearts. I think people want to see other people do well and be successful. And honestly, you know, when somebody does something mean-spirited like that, I feel sorry for them. Because, like, what, you know, what's going on inside of you that makes you have to take somebody else and make them look bad or tear them down or really just anything negative? Then you're right. You know, building that safe space leads to more compelling content. Building that safe space leads to more compelling stories. Building that safe space leads to inspiration, leads to hope. And, like, that's, you know, it's been a long, long journey for me. I've been talking about recovery and talking about my life for a lot of years. And a lot of the guys who joined me on Night of Recovery had just started doing that a year before, or a couple days before, or even their first time was captured on video. And just watching them and listening to Jesus, because he'll, you know, go around to treatment centers locally and talk at least once or twice a month. And, you know, just watching his growth over the last 2 years has been so, so inspiring. You know, life is just beautiful. It's really hard to quantify all the awesomeness at once. But, you know, once you abandon your own ship and step onto somebody else's, which, you know, is the ship of recovery, life gets really good.
Yeah, you talk about growth. Like, this is all growth. It'll keep growing. Like, the first time you did it, the next time you do it, like, it's always different. It's not the same. It's not meant to be like, this is it. This is a final, like, product, or this is an end goal. This is a continuation. You know, this is going to keep on going. And where this heads in the future is a journey too. And I think that's a question I wanted to ask you about is too, is like, where, you know, like, with where things are now with what you're doing, like, where do you see this going in the future? I know you mentioned briefly about going to other states. I think we'd love to have you. I'm going to speak for Wisconsin and say, I that'd be amazing to have you out here at something or to be a part of it. In my mind, I'm thinking of what can I send you to look into or be a part of, but where do you see this going, or what do you see for the future? Some things that you have going on, because I imagine there's ideas in there. I imagine there's some areas you want to go towards that you're not just here. I've done this and I think I'm good now. I don't see that out of you.
No, I mean, I could theoretically rest on some of my laurels, but they get boring. You know, I like to do stuff and I like to go meet people and I love, you know, just listening to stories, and I love hearing where people are and meeting them in that space and just kind of providing that hope. And, you know, we've been in talks with a lot of different people in a lot of different areas. Tampa, Florida specifically is one of the ones that I think we're pretty close to getting something nailed down on. Oklahoma City, I have a great friend, Drew Cook, out there who does some tremendous harm reduction work. I think it's called Shred OKC in Oklahoma City. So we're hoping to get out there and support their nonprofit at some point. I think our good friends, Bill and God, why can't I remember his name? I feel like a butthead. But over in Cleveland, they're working on getting us out there. Pittsburgh's working on it. Seattle, Washington. There's just a lot of different cities and a lot of different areas that we're hoping to be able to get out to and have a night of recovery, really bring the communities out, bring everybody out, get a little bit of education, get a little bit of inspiration, and truly just spread love. I mean, I have no idea where this thing's going to end up. I didn't think when we did the first one that it was going to become a thing on Prime Video, or that it was going to become a, you know, a nationwide discussion, or that I was going to have, you know, newspaper interviews with movie critics or, you know, anything like that. We were just like hanging out and hoping to inspire our community. And it blew up into this just beautiful thing that has inspired so many people across the country. And I could not be more grateful. So wherever it goes, I'm here for it. And whatever happens, I'm excited about it.
That's amazing. And it's so, like, I use the word organic, but it just seems so genuinely like this could have gone nowhere, and it you're still doing it. You went out there with something, and where it's going is, you don't know where you didn't know before. Like, that's part of the, you know, I think when I look at the mental health side, you know, anxiety, uncertainty for a while, and for a lot of times uncertainty is scary. Uncertainty of not knowing. But I think when I hear you talk about it, like there's some excitement in there. You know, there's some, you know, when you don't know, you sometimes then go find out, you know, you go discover, you go explore. You don't know where you might be doing this in the next year. And that's not scary. It could be. It can be, but it can also be like a good scary, like a, I don't know where this is going to go, but I think we should go find out, or I think we should go explore and discover where that's going to be, but not scary, paralyzing, not scary, dreadful, where I feel like I can't do anything or I don't know what to do. Kind of back on that, it can be a struggle, but there's still hope. There's a belief, there's possibilities. And that's exciting.
And I think that applies. It's the same principle and the same theory, is there's beauty in the ugly, and there's also beauty in the unknown. And if you can keep your eyes and your mind focused on that beauty and not even worry so much about the potential negatives, especially the ones that haven't happened yet. I think I spend more time worried about negative stuff that hasn't happened than anything else on earth. And every time I'm focused on something negative that hasn't even happened yet, I'm taking myself out of the moment. When I take myself out of the moment, I'm not present. And when I'm not present, I'm not of service. I'm not here. I'm not existing. And so what I'm doing is living in a world that doesn't even exist. And how is that productive? How is that healthy? It's not.
Yeah. The living in the world of shoulds, that that always comes up in therapy at some point with people, of the, well, it should be like this and should be that. And I remember famous therapists would say, stop shoulding all over yourself. But it's living in a world that doesn't exist. You know, yep. When you make decisions off of a world that you say should be, but when you really look at it, it's not how that is. And that's where then things don't line up, when you're taking action based off of something that's not real or existing. So, I mean, this has been a really amazing conversation. You know, when I got the invite to watch it and then see what it was all about, it was a first of a kind of experience, but I feel like our conversation's gone from, you know, such philosophical, deep meaning, purpose in life and what this is all about has been really, I'm enjoying it a lot. I did not anticipate that this was the kind of conversation we were going to have.
Me either, man. And I love going into these podcasts pretty blind and just going with the flow and not even really knowing, you know, where we're going to be and what's going to happen. And I think there's a lot of authenticity and power in that. And that's kind of with Night of Recovery. You know, we didn't plan anything. We just kind of were like, hey, we're going to go on stage and talk about recovery in front of all these people who came out to gather with us. And just, you know, when you take life in that breath, there's so much power in it and there's so much beauty, because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know where the conversation is going to go. It's almost like your heart's leading it instead of your mind. And when your heart leads instead of your mind, beautiful things happen.
Yeah. When I watch them, for me, someone that does a podcast, but like I present at conferences, and I know I try to, you know, what I walked away from it was like, you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to try to pretend that everything is okay, that it's completely acceptable and okay to be on that stage and not have everything be all together. And that's what I really connected with a lot of the speakers, was just the genuine, raw, authentic, this is who I am, and I'm okay with that. You know, a good colleague that I work with does an amazing job. Whenever I see him, he always has this saying, is come as you are. And I was like, man, I've never felt so seen, when, because I've talked with him about different things. And one time I was like presenting at a conference, and I was wearing a suit, and I like wearing a suit when I present. But a part of me was like, oh man, I should have maybe dressed differently this time. Like, I wasn't sure with the crowd and with any. He just says it all the time. He's like, come as you are. Like, just come as you. And I was like, oh my goodness. Like, I felt so seen. And when I saw it, them all share their stories, I felt that, where it was just, this is who I am. This is my story. I'm okay with that. It's not where everything is perfect, but you know, it's almost better that it's not.
Yeah. And I embrace that imperfection. And, you know, at the beginning of my, my quote, you know, treatment or healthcare CEO experience in 2016, I would always dress in like the ridiculous button down with tie and suit and like just try and fit in with other people. And it was not me, not at all, not comfortable, just ugh. And so I discovered after a period of time that like the more comfortable I am, the more me I am, the more effective I am. And just providing a space for other people to just be them is probably the most human thing you can do.
Which is why I love therapy. Like I the more and more I do it, the more I get back to the roots of just being another human, another like soul in the space with another. Is, you know, all the ways I help people are great too, but part of it is just having that space for someone to feel comfortable, you know, being who they are and not trying to say what they think I want to hear or be a certain way that they think I want them to be, or how they feel like they have to be somewhere else or around others. You know, therapy is amazing in a lot of ways, but one of them is because of sometimes I see people in their form that they don't show others. You know, like, man, I can come in here and share these emotions or tell you these things that I haven't told anyone or haven't shared anyone. And it's a really unique space experience.
Yeah. And having the ability to receive that in the right way is so important too. And just like, you're right, on that most basic human level, providing somebody a space where they can just let go and be. And, you know, I didn't even realize until I started therapy, like, you know, 16, 17 months ago, I didn't realize a whole lot of the stuff that I had been doing. I didn't realize a whole lot of the conditioning that occurred as a youth. I didn't realize how that equated to, you know, a lot of the decision-making that I had done over the last decade. And I never would have known that, even though I had been in the therapy space and around the therapy space, I had never actually really dove into it on a deep level. And once I did, and once I got comfortable enough with my therapist to just bleh all over, and she was able to receive it and sort it out for me and show me different ideas and show me different paths, like, I have been on fire ever since. I've been crying on podcasts left and right. I've been, you know, just everywhere I go, man, I'm just a ball of emotion. And being able to harness that emotion and be aware of the emotion in a way that I've never been before, I mean, therapy is incredible. So I will back you up on that till the day I die. I will also be in therapy till the day I die.
Yeah, that's great. Love hearing that, because there's so many things about it that it sometimes overcomplicates things. And I sometimes like to go back to, let's just start with that basic notion of, if someone doesn't feel safe and they can be their genuine self, like, what else is going to, like, none of that other stuff is going to work. You know, that you can't get to all that until someone can feel safe enough to be their genuine self in front of you. So I feel there's so much we could talk about, Chris. I feel like this could go on for hours. We're gonna have connections to, you know, where they can watch the video, where they can learn more about you. We'll give them all links to the audience. They'll have all that. What would be, this is kind of like this question is just, what's your final take or your final, you know, giveaway to people that have been listening to us talk and we're going to learn more about you and what you did. What is your sort of last or final message to audience and listeners?
The biggest takeaway is, if you're struggling, if you're hurting, if you're sober 20 years, if you're sober 1 minute, if you're sober never, who cares? If you're hurt, if you're struggling, if you want to improve, if you want to grow, do not be ashamed. Never be ashamed.
of anything that you're feeling, anything that you're going through, because a lot of the time being afraid of my emotions and being afraid of talking and being afraid of being open and honest with myself. As soon as you do that, life blows up. Life gets big. Life gets beautiful. So no matter where you are on that spectrum, always keep your eye on growth. Always keep learning. Always keep moving. And if you're feeling stuck, if you're struggling, if you're hurting, anything like that, look me up on Facebook. Look me up on Instagram. Look me up on wherever you can find me. Google my name. Spell it wrong. Who cares? Send me a message. Reach out. Do not be ashamed. Do not be afraid. I won't judge you. I don't know where you are on earth, but like, we'll connect you with some people who do love you and who do care. So do not be afraid. Do not be ashamed. Do not let stigma dictate where you go and what you do, because you're beautiful. I love you. I've never met you. That's my takeaway.
That's amazing. It's almost speechless. You leave me as you say that. So I've really enjoyed this, Chris. I think the audience who's going to listen to it, but also watch Night of Recovery, learn more about what you do, are going to be, you know, inspired, motivated. They're going to, I think, feel a connection that there's someone out there that is there for them, even though they don't know you. And this is the first time hearing about you. So you definitely have a way of voicing that and getting people, I think, to realize that they may feel that way, but it's not the truth. The truth is there are people out there. There is hope out there. And you're just one of many who are doing it and doing an awesome job of it. I'm so blown away at the conversation and everything that you've done behind it. It's really an amazing, unexpected, you know, experience that we've had talking about this from your work in the video. So I can't thank you enough for joining.
My pleasure. I mean, thanks for having me. Thanks for spending this time with me. And, you know, we can always do this again. You got my info. We can always talk. We can always hang out. I mean,
my goal is to see how to get you in Wisconsin somehow, you know, whether it's an event or a conference or something where you leave your imprint here, because I think that is a good imprint to have on the collectiveness, and having you continue to spread out your message and share more I think that's just what we need. So once again, thanks for joining. We'll have all your stuff for audience members to find you, connect with you. He basically told you to connect with him. He invited you to find him and to message him. So
I mean it. Do not be afraid. I mean, there's so many times in my life where like beautiful things have started because I was inspired to reach out to somebody. And I don't even know where the inspiration came from. Don't care where it came from. I reached out, I connected with other people, I kind of grew my network, you know, whatever it might have been, it might have just been a great conversation, whatever that is. You know, if you feel the need, if you feel struck, if you're lost, you don't have anybody to talk to, shoot me a message. I'm always, always around. It might take me a little bit to get to it, but promise, I'll answer.
That's amazing. And I hope a lot of people do reach out, because when people give that invite, I like to see people take a chance and do that. And then you find out that, oh my gosh, I reached out to him and he messaged me back, or he did that. And it's taking that little leap of trust and a little bit of vulnerability that, you know, I'm going to send this message out or reach out, and was he going to answer me? Maybe not, but you know, I've got trust that you're someone that will do that. So I appreciate that.
Absolutely. But again, thank you for your time. This has been awesome.
Yeah. So listeners, find his stuff, talk to him. We'll hear more. We'll see more, hopefully cross off some more states of the impact you've had. And as always, I hope that audience members, you know, a lot of takeaways and learn something from this. So thank you, Chris.
You've been listening to Talking Addiction and Recovery with Andrew J. Schreier. We're so glad you've joined us and invite you to connect further with the show and these topics at www.andrewjschreier.com. That's Andrew J. S-C-H-R-E-I-E-R.com. You can also email us directly at talkingaddictionandrecovery@gmail.com and connect on social media. Instagram at Talking Addiction and Recovery, Facebook Talking Addiction and Recovery Podcast, and Twitter at @TalkAR_podcast. To stay connected and never miss an episode, be sure to like, rate, and subscribe. Until next time, friends, let's keep talking addiction and recovery.